Anyway, I'm over here on 43-B in the workbook, taking a look at approach number two for the TCP lab. It says I can use TCP dump or Wireshark, so you know where I'm going, right? I'm going to TCP dump, my friends. And I think we're dealing with TCP as the file. The first question is, examine the packet with a destination host of, okay, I'm going to start adding in a couple other fields here. Let me throw in the dash N to get rid of that name resolution. I'll stick on the dash T just so I'm not wrapping lines on this thing. And I can see that we're filtering stuff. I'm just going to start putting that in. DST host 192.168.2.109 and SRC port 2056. What is wrong with it? Okay, well, there's the packet. Looking at this level, we can see the behavior. We appear to have a packet coming from 2.45 on 2056 going to 2.109 on port 80. It appears to be a SYN packet, sequence number, window size, length. Is there anything there that looks wrong? Zero length for a SYN packet, though. Yeah, and that length that it's showing you there, by the way, in the TCP dump output, once you start looking at flags and stuff, it is now showing you stuff from TCP's point of view rather than IP's, because it does it layer by layer, remember. It's saying, here's how much TCP data there is. None. So it's not talking about the IP length. If I wanted to see the IP length, I could throw in a dash V or two. Let's throw in a dash V over here. And I can now see that I've got, alright, so IP. At the IP level, I've got a type of service of 0, time to live of 64, the ID is 1. ID is 1. Is that legal? Yeah, an ID of 1 is legal. How big is the TCP ID? I'm sorry, the IP ID field? Okay, we're just throwing out numbers now. You're like my son when he used to do his math homework. Okay, get out that quick reference. Take a look there. I'm just going to throw up a dash X here so we can enjoy and bask in the hexadecimal. And we see I've got, I'll help you out here, 4. What's the 4? Version. What's the 5? That's, what do you mean by size? Header length. Yeah, good. So 5 times 4 is 20. Followed by 00, what's that? Type of service or, give me another name. ECN, differentiated services, excellent. Followed by a 2-byte field, known as the total length field. Followed by the, there's the ID. So how big is the, it's 2 bytes.
Awesome.
2 bytes. Yeah, but you're like, you're all throwing out numbers there. All right, 2 bytes. I have a 2-byte field. The behavior of this number. Now I'm not gonna put you to great pain. You might remember that it might start at some arbitrary number and begin counting up. It might have a bunch of random numbers in there. It might be 0. When would I expect it to be 0? If fragmentation is turned off, how would I know that was turned off? The DF bit was turned on. Is the DF bit turned on in this packet? It is not. Good. The reason we know is we got a 0 sitting over here. If it was a DF, that would be a 4. So, okay, so DF is not turned on. So I don't expect to find a 0. So this 16-bit number could be any number. But I don't know. One? That could happen, but I don't know. That's hard for me to buy. That it just happened to be a one, the first packet. Computers don't start there. This would be like an initial sequence number, okay? Let's say we had an initial sequence number. How big are sequence numbers? You're going to make me take part of the TCP header with you guys? Come on. How long is the TCP sequence number? You got this. Go ahead, look at the quick reference. Well, what? Four bytes, yes. 32 bits, 4 bytes. Is 1 a valid value for a sequence number? Yeah, sure, that's valid. Initial sequence number is supposed to be a random number, right? Yeah, you could have one. Would that be really, really, really odd that it was a one? That of all the random numbers in that 32-bit space, we got a one? I'm not sure I've ever seen that happen. And it's largely because when computers generate random numbers, most of them have sort of a bell curve shape to them. Now, the better the random number generator, the flatter the histogram would be, but there's usually going to be a peak in the middle of that thing. So you will find that you tend to have sequence numbers that are more toward the middle than you ever do toward the ends. Those ends can happen, but wow, one would be strange. That ID number is odd. It's not wrong. We're being asked what's wrong with it. Well, that's not wrong, but if I'm an analyst and I'm seeing that packet, that's going to get my attention. That's a little strange. The next field, we've got the fragmentation stuff going on. That all looks okay. Following that, I've got the time to live, 64, that's okay, followed by TCP, that looks all right. Then I got a checksum. Oh, man, we're not calculating those by hand. So let's take a look what's going on up here. It's not commenting on it. Okay, it looks like must be okay because it did not comment on it on the IP level. But your eye might be drifting down here. That checksum is incorrect. What checksum is that? That's the TCP checksum. So remember before I was saying there it's showing you decode by layer. So here's the IP stuff, and at this point, now we're looking at TCP stuff, so there's a separate checksum there. It's saying the checksum in the TCP header is zero, and that's not right. I think we found something that's wrong with this packet. What will happen to the packet? Gets dropped. By who? By the receiving host. Why doesn't the router drop it? Yeah, it doesn't even look at it. It doesn't care. It only cares about IP checksums. All right. Wow, we took a long time to answer that one question. You guys did an awesome job, though. Exercise two. What is suspicious about the two records identified with a source port of... Okay, let's start editing this thing here. Source port of 4545. Let's see what we got here. So we'll just... I left the V on there. Let's take a look at the high level here. These also have ID 1. That is suspicious. And the fact that they both have ID 1 is more suspicious. Signs of things written crafted, but probably not what we're looking for. Looks like in this case, well, looks like the checksums are okay. That's all fine. Let's see what else is happening here. We've got a SYN packet going to port 80 from 4545. It's a SYN packet, and it has a sequence number of, well, it's showing me two sequence numbers here. How many sequence numbers are actually in the packet? Yeah, only one. Only one. And normally on an initial SYN, well, let's take a look. There's an initial SYN up here. Here's one we can compare it to. Normally on the initial SYN, it only shows you one number. Well, why does it show me two numbers here? I'm going to highlight this over here. Why does it show me two sequence numbers? Guesses are okay? Well, it might be crafted. I mean, that one looks crafted, but...
I thought if you were acting another packet, you're going to have two sequence numbers.
That is true. He says, well, if you're acting something, you're going to have two sequence numbers. Yes, you will, but you would have a sequence number, and then you'd have the word ACK, and then you'd have the acknowledgement number. That's not what I have here. I have a sequence number followed by a colon, followed by another sequence number. It's what? It's passing. I'm going to remove the word through. It is passing something. What? It's passing data on the SYN. Is that typical? That is not typical. If it were doing that, the only time that would be typical would be that special case we had yesterday of the fast open, which would require TCP options. I think it's TCP option FE with that magic number, right? But in our case, now I'm gonna watch this now. You may not go this fast. I'm going to look over here, and I'm going to say, and this packet doesn't have options. And I highlighted that 5. How do I get there? Help me out. That's the TCP header link. That is outstanding. How'd you know that? Because there's nothing else you would have highlighted. Okay, that would be fair. It's at the right offset, he says. What? How did he know that? Because remember we said, this is not just about counting the bytes. There are things that you just start to just recognize, right? If I'm looking at this TCP dump output, you okay there, Stu? Oh, no problem. Okay. Just looked like there's a problem there. Okay, so if I've got 4500, if that's where my packet starts, then I know that header is 20 bytes long. I know it ends right there. And I know the next thing inside of it is TCP. There we go. We got 6. And I know that just by recognition. I don't have to count it. I know that that is where the TCP header length will be. The 12th byte offset. There it is. We got a 5. So 5 times 4 is 20. 5 times 4 is 20. You might have forgotten how we got here or why we're even talking about this. What was I checking to see? Are there any options? Are there any options? No, there can't be because it would have to be bigger than 20, and it's not bigger than 20. So this is definitely odd. We've got data on the SIN. Now, we might be interested in checking something else. I could do the ASCII output. It might actually be worth doing that. Let's do the ASCII output here. I was going to say to see if it's different. I'm looking up here, and I see 474F, 4F44. Down here, I see 4556. Well, that looks different. The end of it looks the same. Let's throw in a dash capital X. Oh, there's 2 different payloads in it. So these might at first glance appear to be a retry, but they can't be a retry because the data is different. They have the same sequence numbers. They're both apparently trying to start a conversation, but they have a changing payload with data on the SIN. How'd you do? Yes, sir. Yeah, I would 100% of the time expect a retry to have the same checksum. The only time it would not have the same checksum, the TCP checksum would stay the same. It would not have the same checksum if, on the IP level, it took a different route and I had a different time to live. Otherwise, I expect these to be exactly the same because it's a retry. You're resending exactly the same packet. Yeah. All right, fantastic. Compare 2 sets of TCP activity. There's activity from source host. All right, let's start typing here. I'm going to get rid of the dash X. And I'm going to take off the dash V for now. If we need it, we'll throw it back in there. So what I got here? I've got source host 10.254.1.8. And then the other one is, what am I looking at? Other set involves destination port 143. DST port 143. What's my question? One is a set of connections. One set of connections is retries. The other one is a set of connections and is actually a successful SIN. What? Is actually a successful SIN. Connections to the destination IP. No other data. Which set is retries? Okay. I don't know. That question confused me. Which set is retries? I got that. Well, let's take a look here. I'm looking at these top ones. I see I'm coming from 3655 going to 21 SIN with a sequence number. And as my eyes scan these all look the same. On the other hand, over here, I've got 1859 with this sequence number. Then I've got 1860 with this sequence number. Then 1866 with this sequence number. Which set is retries? The top one, because the retries should be absolutely identical. These bottom ones are several connections, 4 different connection attempts. Number 4, there are some obviously crafted fields in one TCP connection going from source host 192.0.2.1 and DST host 10.10.10.1. List all the anomalies that you detect. Oh. All right. Let's see how we do here. Oh, whoops. Got an extra quote on there. All righty. Now, I am going to cheat a little bit. I'm going to cheat and say that we have been told that we're looking for TCP abnormalities, so I am going to completely bypass the IP header and say that that's okay because we're focused on TCP. So that means we're starting here. What is the first field in the TCP header? Source port. How many bytes is it?
Two
bytes. Valid range? 0 through 65, 535. That would be a valid range. However, how frequently is port 0 used? Oh, it's not used. Yep. So if we see port 0, there's automatically something not right. What's the source port?
0.
Okay, there's something not right there. What is the next field inside of the TCP header? We've got the destination port. It's also 2 bytes long. We've got the same commentary for that thing, so I expect it to be in range 0 to 65, 535. This one is 0, so it is obviously bad. What follows the source and destination port?
Sequence number.
And how many bytes is that sucker? How many bytes is that? Oh, yeah. That would be 4 bytes. Yeah, not 0 bytes. Very good. 4 bytes. It happens to be set to zeros. Is that suspicious? That's a little odd. That's a little odd. Following that, we have a 4-byte value called the ACK. That's the other side sequence number. That is also set to 0. That could happen, I guess. You know, we could wrap around and just happen to land on 0, but I don't know. That's pretty odd. That looks suspicious. Following that, we've got header length or data offset, right? It's called either one. In this case, how long is the header? What do I do with that number that appears here? I multiply it by 4, so the header is 24 bytes, I think, right? Wait a minute, 4 times 6, 24, right? Yeah, okay. Following that, we have some reserve stuff, and then we've got 3F. What's that? What are we looking at there? That's every flag. That's what that is. I'm looking at my quick reference over here. Well, it's almost every flag. It is urge, act, push, reset, sin, fin. It is that. What are not turned on? Which ones are not turned on? CWR and ECE are not turned on. That's right. I don't know. I guess they were kind of slacking on those two. All the rest are turned on. That's odd. Following the flags, we then have the what? Window size, 2-byte field. What is that again? It is 0 in the packet. What is the window size? No, what's it used for? The buffer. What size is my buffer? I got a 0 size buffer. That's, well, I guess, I mean, this is a really broken packet. But let's just imagine for a second this was a SYN and had a window size of 0. Would that be strange? Yeah. Why am I opening a connection if I have no memory for a buffer? Yeah, that would be odd. So it's how much room I've got left. Following that, we've got the checksum. I have no idea if that's right or not. Let's throw in a dash V up here, find out. And, hey, the checksum's correct. Good news. Despite all of the other deficiencies this packet has, it has a valid checksum. Following the checksum, we have what? Urgent pointer. In this case, the urgent pointer has a value in it. It's trying to point off into some data somewhere. That's going to be a problem because we don't have that much data. That's going to be a little bit of an issue. Following that, we start to have some other stuff. Have I become misaligned somehow, or am I in the right place here? Hang on, I'm confusing myself. No, that's the right place. So the next thing I have here is what? Looks like I got some kind of options, and then I've got, and it's going to be 02, whatever that option is. I'm going to assume it's right. It's interpreting options up here. And then I've got it's 4 bytes long, so it ends over here. Then I've got option 4, it's 2 bytes long. Then I've got 0, 8, 0, 8, 0, what's going on over here? Now wait a minute. How long is this whole thing? The whole thing is supposed to be 44 bytes long. How many bytes long am I? I feel like I'm longer than that. Well, Well, the urgent pointer's in there. It's probably, I think it's pointing somewhere we don't have stuff. Let's just work this out. So this guy up here, 45002C. So that would be 1632 plus 12. 44 bytes. I have a 20 byte header followed by a 24 byte TCP header. Is that okay? Does that work out? That's 44 bytes. Where would 44 bytes end? Well, I believe that 20 bytes ends here. So this would be 21, 22, 23, 24. Does that seem right? I think that would be 24 bytes, right? So then this thing that I was looking at it as an option, is that an option? Or is that just some junk floating around after the packet? Yeah, that's just some junk out there. Unless I'm miscounting something. If I'm miscounting something, please, you know, light me up about that. But it looks like we've just got some junk floating around out there. Huh, that's interesting. That doesn't mean anything in particular. That could be an artifact of padding. It just got sucked out of somebody's memory. We can't rely on padding getting sent from hop to hop. It's probably just padding. It's interesting that it's out there. That's another oddity. Did anyone find any additional oddities when you were looking at that TCP packet? Or is that more than enough for us? Okay, that's good enough for us. Number five. I think this will be the last one we do, because we're already running into the day here. If we want to do more of them, we can do them later. We are seeing a lot of SYNACK TCP segments from source host. Okay, let's get started here. Drop out that -V again. Oh, and the -X. All right. From source host 68.178.232.100 and DST NAT 10.10.10.0/24. Let me try that. Yet a sensor that collects all outbound traffic never saw the 10.10.10 host sending outbound SYNs. Assume that 10.10.10 addresses are routable. Can you explain what's happening? Okay. Whoops, got an extra quote in there again. All right, let's see what's going on here. I've got packets. They are. I'm just going to zoom down just a hair. Or, well, maybe I'm not. Control. No. Isn't there like a hotkey for that? Okay, never mind. I'm not going to scroll down. So we've got these packets coming in. They are. What's going on here? I've got SYN packets, or are they just SYN packets? They're SYNACK packets, right? Because of that dot sitting in there, there's an ACK. And by the way, Andrew and I did a little research this morning. He went out last night. He did some research about why isn't that an A. And there's some developer who posted something saying, well, that would require an entire rewrite of the entire piece of TCP dump library. That's insane. Who would ever want to do that? So we said, well, heck, let's go grab the source code to that thing and just try that out. Let's see how true that is. And it turns out that, sorry, I can't talk and type my password at the same time. We recompiled it. We made a one-line change to TCP dump. And, okay, we've got some ARP going on here. Let's just reload. We've got some TCP going on now. With a one-line change.
There it is.
So it's either a complete rewrite or a one-line change is apparently the answer to that question. No idea why they made that decision originally. But that dot means it's an ACK. So SYNACK. The sequence number he's sending me, his initial sequence number, 576027220644, are his initial sequence numbers changing? Yes. The acknowledgement numbers are not. That means that whoever is sending him those SYNs is not changing the initial sequence number. It's a static initial sequence number, even though host 10.10.10.10 10, 10, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. So these addresses are changing. Could this be he is spoofing packets at us, he is forging packets, firing them at us, and he's sending SYNACK packets trying to elicit reset packets to discover hosts? Could that be? Yes, that could be. Is it also entirely possible that someone is spoofing our hosts, firing out SYN packets to this poor web server using a static sequence number, but lying about the source address And he's now sending back SYNX to who he thinks sent him the packets. Backscatter. Could be. To what end? Why would someone do that to a web server? Because if I send enough of these SYN connections, I could consume enough of the resources on the machine of half-open connections that it stops answering people's web page requests. Which of those is more likely? I don't know. They're both equally likely. But I would probably lean toward someone's attacking that web server and blaming it on us. That's more likely what's happening. Does that seem fair? All right. I can tell I'm boring you because you're just like staring at me at this point. So, okay. If you want to do more of these, we can do a little bit more of them later on. I'm going to switch over to our...
There's no legitimate reason or no misconfiguration that you could really identify.
Yeah, this would not be a misconfiguration, especially because what we had in the data is we've looked at our packet logs and we never sent the SYNs. So this can't be a misconfiguration. It's not certainly not our misconfiguration, yeah. Yeah, there's something wrong. All right. So I'm going to switch over to our course for today. And my laptop has gone to sleep. That's not a super good sign. Hello. Time to wake up. Fantastic. Today, we're talking about application protocols. Now, there's super good news here. I am going to continue to press you to explain hexadecimal output to me because that is part of the language we're learning. And the bigger payoff, some of the payoff is today, I think already, for the majority of you, certainly, you're tracking as we're going through stuff. You're like, oh, yes, yes, yes. Some of you are like, oh, I know what that is. Some of you are like, oh, yeah, now that you point at it, I sure know what that is. So that's good. That's where you should be. Part of the big payoff is going to be tomorrow when we now start trying to write signature detects for zero-day stuff. So being able to parse packets and all that is, wow, being second nature is going to make a huge difference for you. The behavioral stuff is going to come into play as well tomorrow, and we'll do a little bit of it today, too. For today, though, it's going to be easier because there's less new. Let's look at more packet headers. We're through all that, so the hard stuff is over. We are going to take apart DNS a little bit, which is a little bit painful, but it's worthwhile. It's just used everywhere. But we're never going to have to decode one of these things using the binary. It's just not going to be necessary for us. We're going to start with something slightly different, though. We're not going to jump into the application decode right away. Instead, we're going to start with this phenomenally useful tool called Scapy. Scapy is a tool that is designed to allow you to craft packets. It certainly can do that. Sort of a packet crafting framework. But more than that, you could look at it sort of as a packet research framework. It allows you to take packets into an environment, sort of a programming interactive environment, and manipulate them and look at them. And perhaps say to yourself, what would happen if I made a packet that looked like this? How would a host react to that? This makes our life a lot easier because I'll tell you, in years past, if you had an idea where you said, I'd like to craft a packet and see how the host reacts to that. But if I look further on, you'll see that it also has, this program cannot be run in DOS mode. And that's a wonderful fingerprint to look for because you'll find it in executable files. So up here, we can say, let's search for DOS mode. And I can see we have, in fact, transferred executables and they appear to have happened on port 80. Now, I am not aware of an easy way to do this. It would be amazing for me, and if you find a way to do it, you let me know. It would be amazing for me to apply a display filter and then be able to go into the file menu, export objects, and choose to export the objects that are only being displayed. Man, I'd love that, because what we've filtered so far is find me DOS executables. That's all I want to export. I'm not aware of a way that I can do that right in here. Oh, yeah. But I could do that. What I could do is save out those selected packets, then reopen that. So that is the only approach I know of. I don't know of a way to just do it natively. In any event, we're not going to do that. We're going to simplify for now. I can go to the file menu. So file, step one. Down here under export objects, I can choose objects like SMB objects, so files transferred that way, or HTTP objects, those are wonderful. And monitor this option, because you'll see things get added to it over time as new versions of Wireshark come out. It has to do with the implementers of the protocol decoders, if they add in features that hook into this. Once that's done, I could choose to perhaps save all, selecting a directory name or defining a directory name, and just clicking the OK button. And by doing those things, it will now go and create all of those extracted objects. It will go and reassemble the streams, grab the data, save the file. And it's only saving the file. So when I said HTTP objects, it is not saving the HTTP headers and all the wrappers around it. It's only saving the files out. So on the left, we're just looking at it with LS. Okay, I can see how many files I got. Over on the right-hand side, though, we're looking at it now with a, like a file browser. You can see the icons are all correct. And obviously, the next thing you should do after extracting these objects, you should go and double-click on that thing and open it up, right? Right, that would not be the right thing to do. Instead, you would take this into a... But if it's an image file, it's a movie file, there's nothing bad in there, right? What do you think? Is that smart? Have there been all manner of vulnerabilities in the decoders and the players for videos and in images? And there have been... We're not going to get into that in this class because it's not what this class is. But there have been even instances where simply looking at the icon view, you've already been exploited. It's too late. That's a Windows-specific one. But simply by looking at the icon in the directory, the exploit has run. So if you extract the stuff and you want to manipulate it, be very careful in handling it, and you'd want to do it in maybe a VM or some kind of isolated machine. You will find things that try to beacon and phone home. I can't extract all kinds of objects in that same way. Some of them require a little bit of more manual handling. Now, it's not limited to SMTP. It would be any kind of object that you want to get that it doesn't have a native export for. We'll use SMTP because it's a common place to find files being transferred. I can still grab these files, and these require a little more handling than most formats because of how they're transferred. They're sent with 7-bit ASCII. That, again, goes back to the dawn of the Internet when the Internet gateways that we were using in the BitNet did not support 8-bit characters through the gateway. And we used things like XX encode and UU encode, and all those things are gone now. Base64 has become the way we do it. And the whole goal of Base64 is to translate the data into a set of 64 possible characters, all of which are printable and fit in that 7-character space. 7-bit space, excuse me. So then, I could go grab that attachment, which our mail browsers all normally decode for us. We don't have to deal with it anymore. But I could grab the raw data, and I could perhaps decode that data myself. That's how I would get it out of the packet captures. So what we're saying is that we might find some SMTP communication, like we've done here. Once we find that, inside of it, we'll find some MIME information. Multiple Internet Mail Extensions is what that is. You could actually have multiple attachments in a single email. The one I've got here has only got one, so that's going to make it easier. If I have more than one, I might need to use a kind of a find command to just jump down and see how many MIME boundaries there are so I can extract all the attachments. Once I've got that, I can save it. Now, I personally do that a little differently. Just because I'm lazy, I like to skip a step here. What I will frequently do is I will use my mouse to maybe click up at the top, then scroll down to the bottom and hold down Shift-Click. What happens when you've clicked somewhere and then you go to the bottom and hold down Shift and click again? What does it do? It highlights everything in between those two. So I usually just highlight all of it and hit Control-C and then go paste it somewhere. But here in the slides, we're just doing kind of a, just an alternative way. There's no right way to do it. Save that thing out. We've now got a text file out there. Once that thing is saved, I could now open it up in an editor, which is happening back here. So sorry, there's a lot of things happening in the background here. Open it up in an editor, and I could chop out the parts of this up here that are just header stuff, just the email itself. So I'm only going to retain the base 64 piece. be aware that if you use the save as function, it is possible, perhaps even likely, that you are going to end up having Windows file endings. So you know that Windows ends files differently than Unix ends files. So if you go to edit this file using something like gedit, you're going to want to make sure that when you save it, you change that to be Unix file endings, or it's going to kind of mess with you when you try to decode the file. When I use the copy and paste, that doesn't usually turn out to be a problem, because it's naturally converting those line endings as I do the paste. You edit that file, get rid of all the headers, and then simply, so here's the beginning, there's the end, I'm only retaining the base 64 part. I can then save that. Okay, I feel like I've already said this. Save it out, and then use the base 64 tool to decode the file. So up at the top, that's what's happening there. Base64-D, decode this file, point it at that file, redirect it into another file. And magically, you get a PDF back. Now in the example here, and you're going to do it in the lab too, we're using a safe file. Okay? But in normal practice, again, you do not want to just go opening up some PDF file. PDF files, can they have bad stuff in them? Oh yes, really bad stuff. So just in the lab we're going to do that. But in normal practice we would not do that.